Blog Talk Radio.
Going to be joining us via phone line. We're happy to have you here today as we jump into principle number 5 in the emotional bailout series. I am really, really excited. We have been discussing the 9 principles for rising when your world is falling in the emotional bailout series. So hopefully you've had an opportunity to keep up. And if you haven't had an opportunity to keep up, then I encourage you to please go back and listen to the archives and, you know, just catch up wherever you may have left off. And, you know, if you missed any of that or if you need to just, you know, get your bearings or whatever. Because these principles build on each other and, you know, it's really important to have all 5. Because we know the economy is starting to turn around. It's a slow, slow process, but it's going to happen. You have to have positive thoughts and be optimistic and make sure you keep your thoughts where they're supposed to be. We actually talked about that in principle number 3, about changing your thoughts and changing your life. Instead of allowing self-pity to overwhelm you, it's now time for you to be creative and get to work planning and preparing for your future. So regardless of what's going on with the economy, regardless of what's going on in your particular life or situation, there is always optimism that you can choose because it is a choice. So, in principle number 5, which is from vision to victory, last week we actually talked about the vision aspect of it and how it is very critical for you to have a vision. You have to begin with a vision because I can tell you right now, if you can't see it, then you won't be it. And I know a lot of people have it backwards because they say, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, you actually first have to see it in your conscious mind in order to believe it. It first starts with the vision, and then it turns into a belief. So that's the way it works. That's the way it's supposed to work. And if you're doing it backwards, that could be why you're stalled and stuck. So hopefully this is going to help you get unstuck. So this week, I said we were going to kind of jump into outlining your plan, which is part of principle number 5. And if you need more information about the vision aspect of it, feel free to email me directly. And my email address is Kathy, that's C-A-T-H-Y, at chollowayhill.com. Kathy, C-A-T-H-Y, at chollowayhill.com. Otherwise, you can just listen to last week's archive and get all the information about visionary types of work. How you can envision what it is you want, because that is absolutely critical for your success. So if you can't see it, you won't be it. So now talking about outlining your plan, there is a step-by-step process here for outlining your plan, and a lot of this actually aligns with the principles in the emotional bailout series. And step number 1 in outlining your plan is to know who you are. Oftentimes, when I say, who are you, people tend to think of themselves in the aspect of their name. Well, I am, and then they give me their name. Well, I understand that, but it's a lot more to you than just your name. So you have to understand who you are. You have to do an analysis of who you are. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What do you bring to the table? What are your transferable skills? This is critical. If you've been laid off, if you've lost your job, if you're finding yourself in a position where you have no idea which way you're going to go next, this is very important in the process, to know what skills you have that can be transferred to a different career if you want to become an entrepreneur or whatever it is you want to do. Self-analysis is absolutely critical, and it will either totally propel you into outer space or it's detrimental and it can just totally knock you off your throne. So it's something that you absolutely have to do. And then step two in your outlining your plan process is doing your market research. Whatever it is that you are trying to accomplish in your situation, in your career, in your life, it's very important that you research that market and understand what is going on as far as the industry that you're interested in becoming a part of. I can tell you right now, just from my research, I do a lot of corporate training. I go into corporations and I do a lot of staff development and faculty development in colleges and universities and in corporations, employee development. And two of the biggest industries right now that are absolutely booming is healthcare and technology. So if that's your area of expertise, you are in luck. You are in a great spot. So you need to be doing a thorough self-assessment of your strengths and your weaknesses and your values and your attributes, your transferable skills. What do you currently have right now? Do you need to go back to school? Do you need to sharpen your saw? What exactly do you need to do to make yourself as competitive? Because it's very competitive in those two industries. Even if you're not in either one of those industries, it's competitive everywhere. Job searching is a very competitive process. So you have to be at the top of your game. So you need to make sure you understand that. And then as you're researching the industry, make sure you know exactly what it is you want to do, which companies you're trying to target, and what it is about those companies that interests you. Because when you do go in and you have an opportunity to get in there and sit in front of someone, you want to know something about that organization and that industry as well. So do your homework, do your research. That is very important because you will be tested. And as you're going through the test, like I said, I mean, as the economy starts to creep back, there are tons and tons and tons of job seekers. And you don't want to be among the ones who are the weakest ones. You want to be among the ones who are very strong, and you've done everything that you're supposed to do as far as your homework and your background work. Step number three in the process of outlining your plan is to assess your transferable skills. And I just mentioned that, but getting deeper into it, think of the skills that you had in previous careers, in previous jobs, in previous projects. What skills did you have that you can leverage in a new job, such as verbal and written communication skills? I can tell you right now, a lot of people take that for granted, and everyone thinks that they can speak well, and everyone thinks they can write well. Well, it's not that simple. It's not that easy. I have read email notes from individuals who it felt like they were speaking in a foreign language. And I'm not saying that to be difficult, or I'm not saying that to, you know, be trite or anything. That is something that we tend to kind of overlook and take for granted. So assess your verbal and written communication skills and determine whether or not they need to be sharpened or not. Your leadership skills, that's another area that is extremely critical. It's something that regardless of whether you're in a management position or not, leadership skills are critical. They're critical. You're always going to be among a team when you're working in a corporate setting or in any type of setting. Even if you're an entrepreneur, you're going to be working with individuals. You're going to be part of a team. You're going to be working with a group of people. You may be on a board, advisory board, or you may be running your own company, but leadership skills are very important, so assess that. How good are your leadership skills? Are you a leader or a follower? Do people tend to want to hear what you have to say, or do they want to shy away from what you have to say? Project management skills, that's huge. That's very important in any industry, in any job. A project is something that is always going to be there, whatever you're doing and however you're doing it. You've got to be able to put the pieces of the puzzle, which is how a project is. There's lots of different pieces to it. And you've got to be able to strategically align those pieces so that they fall in place exactly the way they're supposed to, so that you can have a positive outcome, and it could be a measurable outcome. And whoever you're reporting to, your superiors, your management, if you're in a corporate job, or your clients, if you're an entrepreneur, they need to be able to measure the success of that project. So assess your project management skills. And all of these have a lot more that I could say about them, but the purpose of this session tonight is just so that you can get an idea of how important these transferable skills are. So it's your responsibility to do a more thorough assessment of these skills. And after project management, then think about your public speaking skills. How good are your public speaking skills? Now, I'm not referring to you getting up in front of thousands of individuals to do a keynote presentation for a major university, although that's important if that's something you want to do. I'm referring to you just being able to get up and do a presentation for your clients. If you're an entrepreneur, that's something that you're going to have to be able to do for your clients. It's something you're going to have to be able to do in multiple different settings. So it's something that you absolutely have to take a look at and assess. You know, where do you stand with that? So that public speaking skills, and then also how detail-oriented are you? That's a very important one, too. That one is something that I can tell you a lot of these things I'm saying, I know you may be thinking, oh, I know I have that. Oh, I can do that. I've done that. But these are not the type of skills that you just kind of overlook or take for granted. These are very critical skills that all employers are going to assess, and they're going to be looking for. These are the skills that are transferable across the board, whatever job you're in, whatever industry you're in. Every single industry wants an employee with these skills. So everyone, all employers at this point, when you talk about a buyer's market, a seller's market, if you're trying to buy a house, right now this is an employer's market. Employers have the right to be very selective, and they are. They are going to be very selective. So your job in this whole process is to be sharp and to be on top of your game and make sure all your skills are exactly as they should be. So the next big one on this list is relationship building skills. Now, I can tell you right now, if you can't effectively communicate or build good relationships, you will not last long. And relationship-building skills are something that you've got to learn that. It's not an acquired thing and you just take it for granted. Hey, you know, I've had relationships. But there's tons of different aspects of relationship-building skills, interpersonal skills, communication. All of that goes into building effective relationships. And that's not what the show is about. Again, I mean, I'm not going to go into detail about all of these particular skills, but these are the ones that employers, I promise you, employers are clamoring to get new employees with these type of transferable skills. The next one is organizational skills. How organized are you? How structured are you? That's critical. Self-motivation. Employers are so busy with the bottom line numbers and designing and creating the vision for the organization and the company, they may not have a lot of time to sit around and hold your hand and motivate you. So how self-motivated are you? How easy is it for you to pull the motivation out from the inside? So, you know, because motivation does come from the inside out. So think about that. Your teamwork skills. How well do you work on a team? Can you work well on a team, or are you a loner? Do you do your best work alone? Think about that. How well do you influence others? Your ability to influence people. That's major, very important. Your self-starter skills, how innovative are you? I mean, these are things that again, employers are going to look for. Do you wait for somebody to tell you that this needs to be done, or do you see a problem and you immediately start working on a solution? It doesn't matter who comes to you and says anything. How resourceful are you? Do you just rely on one specific resource to get something done? This is the way I've always done it, so this is the way I'm going to continue to do it. That's not very resourceful if that's your mindset. How punctual are you? How dependable are you? How creative are you? And as I said, I know I may be going through these very, very fast, but these are very important transferable skills. So think about this. This is what you do when you go through your individual self-assessment. You think about the traits that you possess and the transferable skills that you possess, and then some traits, personality traits. You know, are you friendly, outgoing, happy, generous, kind? I mean, how are you? Empathetic, humorous, patient? These are, again, very important traits to assess about yourself, because these are the types of traits that they're going to look for in the workplace, and these are the type of traits that are going to be successful in the workplace and in an entrepreneur type of environment. Now, once you've identified your transferable skills, the next step is to create something, a document or a booklet, or I call it a job portfolio. I think it is absolutely the deciding factor. I spent 28 years in corporate, in a corporate environment, and I interviewed tons of applicants and tons of potential new employees. And I can tell you, in 28 years, I can count on one hand the number of people or the number of individuals who came in with a job portfolio. Not many people have one, know what it is, or even know how to put one together. And I can also tell you this, the ones who did come in with a job portfolio, they always got the job. So a job portfolio is something that I would call, or you could call it whatever you want. You can get creative and name it whatever you want. But it could be called a brag book, an accomplishments book, a portfolio of achievements, or even a transferable skills book. Transferable skills assessment. So call it whatever you want. I don't really care what you call it. The most important thing is that you call it something and you have one. And however you design it, you can have like a cover sheet, a cover page. You can have a hardback notebook or you know, just one of those little soft notebooks that you buy at office supply store and put your information in there. Now, I know you're probably thinking, well, what goes in there? What does it consist of? Well, as I said, a brag book, an accomplishments book. This is your opportunity to shine. I'm sure there have been many situations where you have received feedback of some sort from managers or coworkers or clients or people that you have worked with that are really happy and they're very pleased with what you've done. Evaluations that you've received. You can make copies of certain pages. You can just mark out the name of the company. You don't want to, you know, spread company business, but you can mark out the name of the company and just share the information that you got. If it was a very good, favorable evaluation, make copies of that. Letters of recommendation from previous coworkers. If you're working with someone on a project and you're the project manager, or even if you're just a member of the project team, ask them to write a letter for you about your work, about your involvement with that project. Awards that you have received, extremely important. Training critiques. If you're an entrepreneur and you have conducted a workshop, or if you have worked with a client from any perspective, if you've done consulting work for a client, ask them to write a letter for you. If you have participated in a workshop and you ask the attendees to fill out a critique, make copies of those critiques and put in your job portfolio. And community work, what have you done in your community? If you've done something and you've received an award for it, by all means, make copies of that award. And there's so many feedback from academic personnel if you've worked in the educational industry. Social networking organization accomplishments, if you sit on advisory boards, the list goes on and on and on. Anything that you have done that warrants being placed either in your bio, if you use a bio, or if it warrants being placed on your resume under your accomplishment section in your resume, then find a way to prove that. Find a way to show it. It's okay to go in with a resume that looks razor sharp. I promise you, the resume can only get you an interview, but the job portfolio will get you the job. I've seen it. I've experienced it. I've been on both sides. As an entrepreneur, I have a job portfolio from my clients. As an employer in corporate, I've interviewed lots of people. Very few came in with a job portfolio, and when they did, it was extremely impressive. So work on that. And, again, if you have questions and you want more information about it, email me personally directly at Kathy@cholloway.com, and I'll be able to give you more information about that. The next step in your outline process when you're trying to get your plan together is to create short and long-term goals. Now, goal setting is critical. I'm sure you know that. It's critical for success, whether you're planning your life or a Christmas party. It doesn't matter. It's something that you've got to understand how to do this, and it's a step-by-step process, and we're going to talk a lot more next week about the goal-setting process because it is a lot to it. I use the SMART formula, SMART goals, specific, measurable, action, realistic, and time, there's a timeline attached to it. Now, the A in SMART, it could be action, it could be attainable. You know, I've seen it both ways. But the most important thing to keep in mind is that it is a formula. There is a formula that goes into setting your goals. And because that is such a major piece of it, I want to dedicate an entire segment to that. So we're going to get more into that next week. The next step in outlining your process is to assess your education and training. Whatever it is you're trying to go for, whatever it is you're wanting to do in your comeback plan, if you've been laid off or if you're trying to decide if you want to be an entrepreneur or not, assess your skills from an education perspective. Okay, maybe you have an undergrad degree, a BS, a BA. Do you need a graduate degree? If you do, where do you need to get your graduate degree from, and what do you want your graduate degree to be in? What area? What field of study? Think about that. Networking, extremely important step in your plan. People hire people they like. I'm going to say that again because it bears repeating because it is extremely important. People hire people they like. And I think that is something that we really need to know. I'm going to go to the phone really quickly here and bring on a colleague of mine that is in the chat room, and I'm very happy to see him, that has a comment. And I am going to open the mic for Dr. John Bauman. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hello, and thank you for being here on the show today. Thanks for calling in.
Sometimes I'm not available at this time, but I found myself available, and I love the things that you're talking about, Kathy.
Thank you, Dr. John. And this gentleman here is he's a major force to be reckoned with. He's a recognized author and a PhD, and correct me if I'm wrong. You're a PhD? You're a PhD, right?
I'm a JD.
Okay, all right, and I know you're a practicing attorney and just so many things, so, you know, you're just an awesome gentleman. So I would love to hear your comment, question, whatever you want to add to the discussion.
What's very interesting about what you described, qualities that people have, being on time, that sort of thing, what I like about that is those are also qualities to strive for and to get more background on. I remember when I was in senior in college, and I already had basically a 4.0, and I took a very difficult creative writing course because I really needed to learn a little bit more about writing and grammar and that sort of thing. I recognized that I had a deficiency there, and I knew I wanted to go to law school, and I needed to be a good writer. So I took a very difficult course, and I still remember that day that I took it, and it was filling a weakness. What's interesting about being a lawyer and what came to mind when you were talking is the qualities you listed are things everyone should strive for.
Right.
They're qualities that employers look for. But what came to mind was the assessment also needs to do is identify your personal preferences. I'll give you an example. Not all lawyers stand in front of juries and give arguments or judges.
Right.
If you are a lawyer, if you want to be a lawyer, but you don't like to be in center stage, you like to be behind the scenes, there are many lawyer jobs exactly that way. don't take a lawyer who wants to be behind the scenes, be a tax lawyer or a Securities and Exchange Commission lawyer or something like that, and put them before a jury.
Right.
And vice versa. Don't take someone who wants to be a trial lawyer and put them in the back room somewhere. So the person themselves has to say, all right, what do I like to do? John Bauman, I like to be in front of juries. I like to be in the center of attention. I will find an area of the law that does that. I remember 15 years ago coming into Brown Forman, great company, mm-hmm. having an interview. And I interviewed with the general counsel, and he said, we're looking for an SEC lawyer. And I said, I have no experience in SEC. I have no interest in being an SEC lawyer. And we're just going to enjoy the next 15 minutes chatting. Because there's no fit here.
Excellent.
You know, you'll get to know me a little bit. But what I'm trying to say is not every job is right for you.
You know, John, I am so, so happy that you called in to make that comment, and I'll tell you why. 85%, and I did not, this is not my research. This research came from tons of psychologists and scientists and people who actually study the marketplace. 85% of people are in jobs they hate. And that statistic is it's sad. It's very sad. But the reason is because of just what you described. Instead of people taking jobs that align with who they are, they start seeing the dollar signs and they start getting so caught up in the money aspect of it that they just want to make the income and forget about what the responsibilities are for the job. But if you're not in a job that you like, if you're not in a job that aligns with who you are, your values, your traits, your attributes, and your transferable skills, you are going to wind up being miserable. Yeah, that money may be nice initially, but it's going to wear off. That's going to wear off. So I'm so happy you made that comment. That is so very true. Look at your skills, yourself, and don't take a job for strictly perks and monetary reasons and whatever, you know, else that is just superficial.
So if somebody offers me $10 million for the next year to do some work that I don't like, I'm going to do it anyway, Kathy, but I'm going to quit after a year and get on a boat somewhere.
Now, you know what? That's an extreme example, but, hey, you know, if something like that were to happen, you're on your own. You're
sort of
so
that.
On your own making that choice. You are so on your own making that choice. But I can understand that. I totally can understand that. But for the most part, for the majority of individuals who I know have been laid off and they're, you know, looking for another job, the economy is starting to turn around, please, please don't take a job because it pays $20,000 or $30,000 more than, you know, what you thought you were going to get. That's just not enough. Well, I don't think any amount of money is enough, really, to be honest with you. No amount of money is enough. Because think about people who have won the lottery and who have won millions of dollars.
Right.
If you start looking at those statistics, why are they broke in a few years? I mean, why are they still not happy? Why did they take half the money to buy drugs and those types of things? So money is not the be-all, end-all. Money is not where it is when you're talking about trying to align yourself with something that truly does bring out the value in you. That's very important. But we're coming up on our last 90 seconds of the show, John. Thank you so much for calling in. Your comments were just awesome, just awesome.
You're welcome.
So I hope you can join us again next week or, you know, for future shows when you have an opportunity. I know your schedule's really busy, but thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your show.
All right. So we're going to, you know, just go ahead and sign off for now. And please, I want to remind you, if you have not listened to the other segments of the principles, go back and listen to the archives because they are there, and we thank you so much. And I'm going to end with this quote because I absolutely love this quote from Henry Ford when he said, whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right. Thank you very much. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill, and I will see you same time next week here on the Living by Design Show. Good night, everyone.